You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature. No matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted that you could join me today. Now, if you've been in the workplace for any length of time, I bet you've been told or heard of someone being told to leave your problems behind you as you walk through that door. And if you've ever tried to do that, you've probably failed. But that's okay, because the truth is that none of us can leave our private lives at the office door any more than we could leave the feet that brought us there. That's the message from Gabriella Brown in her book, All That We Are. Gabriella is a workplace coach and director of Working Well, a consultancy firm specializing in helping people to use an in-depth understanding of their dynamics and behavior to bring about meaningful and sustainable change in their working lives. Now, her book takes psychoanalysis out of the therapy room and into the staff room, using real case studies to reveal the hidden truths behind a range of workplace issues. And to my mind, trying to partition parts of yourself while you're at work must be so harmful to your health, and I do like the play on words with Gabriella's company name, Working Well. I asked her what exactly she does and how she got into it.
What I'm doing is working with leaders, with teams across organisations, very, very different kinds of organisations, corporates, arts and culture, education, schools, further education, university, health, etc. And what I do is help people to work well. And I try to, and this is what's different about Working Well from most consultancies, I apply psychoanalytic thinking and also systemic thinking to really try and get at the stuff that we don't normally think about in the workplace, but is always going on and is really always affects us. I mean, an obvious example is sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
That we take as a given in the family. I mean, we have done for a long time, haven't we? We talk regularly about sibling rivalry, but we don't think about it in the workplace. And actually, our peers, our colleagues, are our siblings at work. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't that come with us into the workplace? Some of the residue of the feelings we had about our siblings when we were children, that's all there. So, but it's not thought about, not talked about. So that's just one small example.
Yeah.
The different lens that I bring to working with leaders and teams and across organisations.
Yeah, and it's very important as well, and because we're told to leave all our personal baggage at the door when we walk through the door to our office or workplace. And that's impossible, really, isn't it?
It's absolutely impossible, because even if we consciously try and do that, we all have an unconscious. And that, you know, the more we push things out of the conscious mind, the more the unconscious will try and make us aware of what we're pushing away in some form or other.
Yeah.
So it's we can't just pretend that we're, you know, we magically leave parts of ourselves behind. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And partly then why I set this up is because I think by trying to ignore so much of what we are and human nature in the workplace, we've got ourselves into more difficulty. And we've let the workplace become, you know, we keep trying to be more efficient, get more profit, do this, do that, the other. And we've made it a very tough place to be. It's not a healthy place to be. Not, of course, all workplaces.
No.
So many workplaces are not good for us. And so I think we need to really pause and reset and take human nature seriously in order to understand what helps us, why we're getting these messes. And that's what working well is about. That's why I set that up.
Yeah, it's really much needed, I think, because so many places that I've worked have been pretty toxic. And, you know, I love your book called All That We Are, and we'll talk about the book as well. But the subtitle is Uncovering the Hidden Truths Behind Our Behavior at Work. And it seems to me that you've really pinpointed something which has been so lacking up to now in the workplace. And that is that we can't just bring a bit of ourselves to work. We are a whole person walking through that office door, and all the things that are in our makeup all arrive with us when we arrive at work. And some of that is not great, and some of it is fantastic, but some of it is really not great and is going to come out somehow in the way we work.
Yes, exactly that. And we all have constructive side and a destructive side. We can't, we might try to pretend otherwise, and it varies person to person, but we all have it. It's yeah. Not, some of us don't have that. So exactly as you say, some of it won't be great, but also we've all got, exactly as you say, our personality that comes with us and our histories.
Mm.
And our different histories shape us, and they will also shape the way we respond to things around us and people around us. So yeah. You and I might respond differently to exactly the same situation or exactly the same people. And that's partly our personality and the history that's helped form that personality.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's no getting away from it. Again, I mean, you know, making the point again, there is no getting away from it, because all that we are comes into the workplace. You all can't hide it.
Everywhere with us, and we can't yeah. hide it.
Yeah. And looking at the book and looking through the book, and I think it's a really great book for people to, I would recommend it to everybody. Not just people at work either. You know, it would be very useful reading for everybody if you want to understand human nature a bit better. But looking through the book, you start off by talking about human nature at work. And the first chapter is titled The Choices We Don't Know We Make. And it really is so true that so many of us are operating from the subconscious. So what do we do about that?
Well, great question. And thank you for the comments that you just made and for recommending the book. That was chapter number one, and it took me a long time to get it to the form it's in now and get the title for it that I got. And when I hit on the title, I thought, oh, yes, that is the right title. Because it sums up what's happening with the unconscious, exactly as you say, that so many of us are making choices unconsciously, and we don't know the effect of the unconscious on us. We can't suddenly know everything about our unconscious. By definition,
it's unconscious. Yeah, exactly, it's unconscious.
But what we can do is bring some of what's in the unconscious into consciousness. We can make more of it available to ourselves by really reflecting and stopping to think about what we're doing and why. So often we'll just go on behaving. We don't think about, hang on a minute, why did I do that? Why did I react like that? I didn't realise I'd made a decision when I did that. I thought I just did it. But there actually was a choice.
Yeah.
I made what I now understand to be a pretty bad choice. So what was that all about? So if we take space to really try and question ourselves and understand ourselves more and think about things like, well, when I did that and I reacted like that, does it remind me of anything else in my history, in my past? And we might suddenly get in our, if we let our minds free range, like, for instance, suddenly have an image of ourselves at school with a teacher and realise that there's something of this situation that reminds us of when we were with this particular teacher and that was great or that was hideous or whatever it was. And that might be, we're repeating something of that now. It could be a teacher, it could be our parents, it could be a sibling, it could be, you know, a holiday experience, it could be anything. But and of course, the people closest to us tend to be most imprinted on us. So usually our parents are, usually our family are most imprinted on us.
We're talking here about acting in ways that we're not aware of. And in ways that, because we're not aware of it, we aren't able to change.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And it works both ways, doesn't it? It's not only work that we might do on ourselves, but it would be rather wonderful if managers and company owners understood these dynamics within the workplace as well, wouldn't it?
It would be great if managers and owners stop to think, hang on, why am I getting that response?
When yeah. I do
this? Or why is this team behaving in that way? Or, oh, I understand this is the ordinary behaviour of a team under a lot of stress. Not conscious, but it's what teams do. And I realise that they're actually letting me know now that they're under extreme stress. And I need to do something about it. That would be great.
Yeah, it would. I do understand that in some companies, some businesses, that level of understanding is present. And you know, you do have conscious managers and business owners who understand these things. But so many organizations just have absolutely not a clue. And you end up with this really toxic environment, don't you?
Yes, you can do. I mean, sometimes, actually, there are numbers of managers and leaders who don't have the understanding, but they have great instincts.
Yes.
Instinctively, they're doing the right things without necessarily the understanding there. And that's fantastic. And you have others, as you say, with a lot of understanding and they put a lot of time and effort into their people. But you do have others who are completely driven by efficiency, productivity, performance, you know, all of those things. And some of the crazy things, in my view, that we're seeing now, like monitoring people when they're at home.
Oh, yeah. So you can't have any privacy.
You can't have any privacy. And saying to them in capital letters, we do not trust you. We know that you are going to get up to no good if we do not have our beady eyes on you. I mean, that does not lead to healthy work relationships. And that does not lead to getting the best out of your people. And that's the sort of thing, plus where the manager's showing no respect for somebody, not just managers, also peers, where we're doing that to each other as colleagues, then it can become toxic and damaging for people.
Yes, and I hear more and more from people who are working for businesses, for companies, all different kinds of establishments, actually. Anybody who's working with, for instance, teams that sort of thing. One can tell if you're sitting at your desk and working, and people know when you're not there or when you are there, when you're logged in, when you're not logged in, and you're supposed to be logged in all the time. That to me is that I would hate that personally.
I hate that personally as well. And I know not loads of companies and workplaces aren't doing it, but a number are. And it,
yeah.
I would really hate it. I would feel so intruded on.
Yeah.
And so distrusted. No, it wouldn't get the best out of me.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, not quite in the same vein, but we've also got a culture that's increasing, as far as I can see, of people being expected to be on all the time. Answer your emails within 2 hours. I mean, some companies have these edicts. You have to answer an email within a couple of hours or within an hour. Otherwise, you're not working efficiently. And, that's an incredible pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not quite the same, in the same vein, but people are coming under more and more pressure at work because of these new technologies.
Well, I think technology, of course, has made enormous advances and has helped us enormously. We couldn't do this without it, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So there are huge bonuses of technology, but also because it allows the possibility of tremendous speed, we then follow that by saying, yes, I expect you to be answering within X amount of time. And again, it's a choice that we're making, and it's a choice based, we think, on efficiency and productivity. But actually, it can just drive people to the ground and mean that people don't prioritize. They don't take the time they need away from email, etc. I think I heard on one of your podcasts, somebody said that he puts up a notice saying,
yes.
I thought, that's a good idea. Just letting people know, actually, I won't get back to you instantly.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen that from a few people recently as well. I think the tide's turning on that. Yeah. I think a lot of people have realised that this is too much pressure.
Yeah.
And, you have to manage the expectation.
Yeah. And I must admit, I don't answer it instantly, and I don't put up that email thing either. And I hope that people understand that I'm not always available.
Yeah, absolutely. I've given myself permission these days not to respond immediately to every email. But it was Thijs Lansbach, the psychologist in the Netherlands, who talked about that. Yeah. And I think he's absolutely right, because his book is called Crazy Busy. And, he was talking about all these issues within the workplace, and that it feeds into what you're talking about here very much so.
And we'll hear more of my interview with Gabriella Brown in a moment. Stay with us as we hear from our station sponsors. Back after this.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, Gabriella Brown. And we continue our discussion about working well, which also happens to be the name of her coaching business.
And yeah, so, you know, there are all sorts of issues that we bring into the workspace that we aren't aware of, some that we might be aware of. For instance, if there's been a death in the family and you're grieving, then obviously you're not able to shake that off immediately when you go to work. But I noticed that you've compartmentalized the book into three areas. And one is, you know, the human nature at work. So what we're talking about here, and you talk about life and death, being good enough, you know, paranoia about what's going on here, you know, belonging, which is a big one, I think.
Yes.
Belonging is massive. If you feel that you belong, then you're less likely to be so stressed and you are more like, well, I don't know, because it depends on each individual's makeup, really, how we respond to all these things, of course. Yeah. But in part two, you talk about losing ourselves. So what do you mean by that?
I mean how we can easily get lost within the destructiveness. So we can let envy take over and poison relationships and poison situations. We can let, there's one chapter in that section called Losing the Plot.
Yes.
where the board of a company literally lose the plot. And I wouldn't try this at home. I wouldn't recommend trying this at home, but I literally say to them, you went mad, which is quite a shocking thing to say to a board. But I only had one workshop with them and they were still precariously sane again, shall I put it that way?
Yes.
They could have gone at any moment and they were really in danger of bringing the company down. And they lost the plot because they were very seduced by a new chief exec who was saying, I can transform this organization overnight. You know, I'll magic it better. I'll magic everything fantastic. And they fell for it. It's a very seductive message. And the ones who were thinking, hang on a minute, now he wants to immediately start the restructuring and re-everything process, and we're not ready. We're not ready. But they knew that in their minds, but they were thinking, oh, I'm just scared of change. I better not say anything. I'm going to be deemed the old fuddy-duddy or the boring one or the change-resistant one. I mustn't say anything. I must get on with it. So they were all in this, people would think of it as group mind, wouldn't they? And they all went along with it. And as they were in it, he left. And they're left with a whole pile of mess.
Wow. That's pretty drastic, isn't it?
It was drastic. And that is a very drastic example. But I'm sure listeners can probably think of other far less drastic examples, but where there is a kind of insanity. We think that we can't use that word. You know, it means that you're going to be locked up in a mental hospital. But we all... Of course, it's a different level when people are diagnosed with particular mental illnesses. That's a different thing.
Of course.
I'm not talking about that. But we all lose our minds from time to time, and we can recover them. And we all go a bit insane from time to time, where we can't, we get completely paranoid, and it's not related to reality. We think everyone's out to get us, and we think our boss sent that email because they didn't like us and they're now trying to force us out and all of... We can all get in that state of mind.
Yeah. And of course, the boss isn't sending it for that reason at all. In fact, something completely different is on their mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But it's very difficult in that space to put yourself into the shoes of the boss who's sending that and seeing things differently. It would help if one could do that. But when you're just at work doing whatever job you've got to do and, you know, meeting your deadlines or doing whatever it is that you have to do, you're not really thinking in that way.
No, you're not. And it is really hard. sometimes I think what we can learn to do is just when we can kind of catch ourselves in those moments. That's a major starting place, that we catch ourselves. And we might just then be able to say, is my perception totally accurate? At least question it. And at least then, if we were about to write a furious email, don't send it. You know, don't do that. Or if yes. we were about to complain to the boss about their unfair treatment of us, don't do it.
Yeah.
Wait a day or so.
But there are ways of changing the dynamic there, aren't there? I mean, don't send off the email to the boss complaining that you're being treated badly. However, you can change things by approaching it differently, maybe.
You definitely can. And you need to be in a different state of mind for that. So you need to be calmer. You need to think about what you're saying. And I think then you can, with both your colleagues and a lot of bosses, you can say something about how you felt when this happened. So, and that's often a much better way of getting into conversations than the accusation is not great.
Yeah.
So you did this to me, whether you're saying that to a boss or a colleague, is not great and can simply be met with a no, I didn't. You're wrong. I didn't do that. But if you start with, I felt this, and when I hear you say X, Y, and Z, what I feel is that you don't trust me or you don't value my work. And yes, the boss can say, well, that's wrong, but they're more likely to be engaged with the thought that you're having because you're not accusing them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't put them on the defensive.
Yeah. Yes, and maybe keep things in the third person so you don't fall into that trap of being accusatory. So yeah. You're not saying you this or you that, which of course instantly makes people go, oh, you're getting at me now.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, they don't hear what you have to say necessarily.
So part of it is putting things in a way that the other person can hear.
Yeah.
So if you immediately raise their hackles, they're not going to hear it.
Absolutely. And you talk about losing agency, which, you know, this is part of how you lose agency. You know, you communicate in a way that's maybe more aggressive, and you get people to kind of step back and close down.
Yes.
Rather than meet you where you want them to meet you. Yeah. And I noticed one chapter on difference and discrimination. And this is, you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong here, but I am seeing a lot more confusion around this these days. Is that the case, or is that just, you know, my window on the world, if you like?
I think there's always been confusion, to be honest, around this. I think often difference isn't particular. No, you might be right, because I think difference hasn't been thought about.
Right.
And now it is more thought about, and it tends to be lumped into discrimination.
Mm.
And they do often go together, but not necessarily. I mean, often people who are different are targets for discrimination.
Yes.
But there can be ways in which we're different that doesn't attract discrimination. So I think it is important to think about them, the two things.
Yeah, and discrimination in the workplace is a huge thing that HR executives probably spend a lot of time talking about, laying down rules about. And I often wonder whether that's, or those rules and the, you know, the regulations. And, you know, if you join a bigger company, you'll probably get a whole handbook of the values of the company and all that sort of stuff. Given that we're all individual, do you think that kind of thing really works? Is it much more valuable to create an environment where these things just aren't a massive issue?
I think the environment is much more important. I think the rules and the policies and the statements about values are important, but they're almost like the, you know, we have rules about how we drive on the motorway.
And yeah. That.
So they're important, but they're not going to be the thing that makes the environment right in the organisation. They're a way of saying this is what we take as important, if they are adhered to and if the company does pay attention to them. Sometimes they're written and put in a drawer. And
exactly.
And that's completely useless.
It ticks a box, right?
It ticks a box. If that's all they're used for, that is useless.
Yeah.
But if they are more than ticking a box, that is important. But it doesn't obfuscate the need to actually have proper and difficult conversations and create, as you say, the right environment.
Yeah, I was just thinking years ago, and I can't remember the name of the author now, I read a book, it was called Corporate Abuse. Mm. And it looked at toxic workplaces and you know, what constituted a toxic workplace. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh my God, you know, you don't really think of workplaces in those terms. And this was some time ago. Maybe about 20 years ago or so. So, you know, there is this does actually exist. You know, there are organizations which have an abusive culture. If you're in an organization where there does seem to be an overarching abusive culture, how does one deal with that? That's not an easy question, I know, for you to answer right here on the spot. But, you know, in broad terms, how would one deal with that?
Oh, let me try and answer it, because it's a very important question, isn't it?
I know, I put you on the spot there, I know, but it just came into my head.
That's fine, I'll try and answer. I think the starting place for me is always the self. So the starting place is to work out if it is really a toxic culture, abusive culture, or is it my reaction to it? Is it me that, am I imagining some of this, or is it really like that? And if it is, and also to ask yourself if there are ways that you inadvertently contribute to it.
Yeah.
Because we often do.
Mm.
Without realizing it, like we contribute to being madly overworked or endlessly expected to be on email all the time, you know, we contribute to those things. So are you also contributing in some way to the abusive culture? That needs thinking about. Are there things that you can say to your boss? Now, some bosses you can, other bosses there's no point, because if it's a kind of, I mean, the obvious example is a Donald Trump figure, which is a real extreme. But and most people aren't like that. But there are some people who you will never get them to change their view of themselves. And they will only want to put you down and further themselves. There aren't many people like that. There really aren't. But if that is the nature of your leaders or your boss, there's not much point trying to have a conversation. In which case, if it really is abusive and you think that there's no change possible, if it's a team, you might want to try and move teams, if that's possible. Because it's all very well and good for me to say leave, but many times people can't leave.
No, it's very difficult for a lot of people to do that, yeah.
Yes, and they have, you know, rent to pay, mortgages to pay, food to buy, and we're clearly going into, well, we seem to be in or going into a recession.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not helpful just to say leave. So I think there's, if you can't leave, which many people, as you say, can't, there's stuff like, can you move team? If you can't do that, then there's thinking about how can I find support from other quarters? There's one chapter in the book you mentioned, Losing Agency, where that team recognises that the support they should get from their boss, they are not getting and they will not get. Their boss and the people above the boss. For all sorts of reasons, they're not going to get the support. And when they finally accept that and get over being furious about it, understandably furious, they find other ways of getting the support they need.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that we can all do. Think about, is there somebody who I can regularly go to lunch with, one of my colleagues in this team or a different team, and that'll make me feel better?
Yes.
Are there things that, am I walking into situations that make me feel worse? Can I step back from some situations? Why do I go to that meeting on a Friday afternoon that isn't mandatory? And I end up feeling terrible and it sits with me all weekend. Mm-hmm. Well, I won't go to that. Why do I go out for lunch with that group that I always feel awful? You know, so there might be some things that you can have more charge about with yourself, or even if it's a boss and you just can't find a way of improving your relationship with the boss, maybe try thinking about the timing of your meeting. So not on a Friday afternoon, maybe never at the end of the day, if you can help it.
You know,
small things that can make a difference.
And we'll pick up with more from Gabriella Brown after another short break, because right now it's time to hear once again from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio, with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and today's guest, Gabriella Brown. Now, discussion reminded me of some of the places I've worked where the culture was far from healthy.
Yes, and I do remember one time working in a company where we just seemed to have one huge meeting and never had any time to do any actual work. And if I had had my wits about me at the time, I might have tried to change that way of working. But in the end, none of it was working for me. So I had to walk away.
Remind me of an important point, actually, which is to seek allyship with others. So there might be things in that situation. It might be possible in the meeting to say, you know, I'd find it easier if there are also slots for this, that and the other, because I don't know. I find it hard to get the work done because I'm so in the meeting.
Yeah.
Maybe you can have spoken to other people beforehand, preparing them for what you're planning to say. And other people might then say, oh, yes, me too. I'd find that really helpful too. So you might be able to instigate some change like that when you're not a boss and you're not a manager and you're not a leader, but you can still make polite, constructive suggestions that can be heard and supported by people.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. And that might have been something that I could have done at the time. And it takes us really to the part three of your book, finding ourselves, having lost ourselves, finding ourselves. And we, you talk about changing patterns, for instance, and speaking, we've talked about this before, speaking the unspeakable and being ourselves. So not fitting ourselves into a box when we're just never the right shape. Can you talk to us a little bit more about the finding ourselves?
Okay, so that is all about our potential. And we, you know, we have the destructiveness within us, but we also have huge constructiveness and potential. And that's the parts of us that have the capacity for kindness, empathy, compassion, love, all of those positive things, for hope as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that can come into the workplace in all sorts of ways. So the thing about changing patterns rather than repeating them, we could get stuck in ourselves and in our teams and in our private lives, just constantly going round and round and round, repeating the same old stuck unhelpful patterns. But it is possible with understanding and awareness and a lot of hard work just break the cycle and to actually think about how you change something. Actually, that chapter came about by listening to a lot of concerts of classical music, and they were extraordinary concerts, and it was Daniel Barenboim.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, it was completely wonderful.
Mm.
And it was really wonderful. And at one concert, well, he, as well as the concerts, he gave some talks, and I went to the talks as well. I was mesmerized by the whole thing. I'd never done anything like it. I literally went to 8 concerts in less than 3 weeks, in which he played the 32 Beethoven piano sonatas.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Ordinary at the South Bank.
Yeah.
So he got very immersed in it because he was going so regularly.
Yeah.
And then he gave these 3 talks as well. And at one of them, I asked a question, and I can't quite remember what I asked, but I remember what he answered. And he said, and he loved the question. And he said, I think you're talking about repetition. And then he went on and he said something else. And I think you're talking about accumulation. And I thought, oh. And then I didn't know what he meant, because he was talking musically, you know, not a musician. But at the next concert, I suddenly heard something different. And I thought, God, there is so much repetition in music.
Yeah.
But it isn't stuck. It accumulates and it does something dynamic and progressive.
Yeah.
And that gave me the idea of a different kind of repetition.
Mm.
So that's where that chapter comes from, thinking about how can we move repetition in a life-driven way that progresses and moves on, rather than this, here I go again, repeating my old stuck patterns.
So you're building on something rather than just sitting on the hamster wheel.
Exactly that. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, not sitting on the hamster wheel, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, madly running around
the hamster wheel, yeah. So I would imagine that could be quite transformative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it takes courage and hard work and awareness and all of those things. And all of this in the workplace is awareness of ourselves, but also awareness of others. So being able to have compassion and understanding towards others as well.
Yeah.
Is part of our potential.
Yes. And understanding the idea or the fact that we are all different.
Exactly.
We have all had different experience that it informs the way we act.
Yes. And allowing ourselves to bring some of our vulnerability there, and that also helps others see more who we are and allows them to be a bit more vulnerable as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so really what I enjoying right now, if that's the right word to use, is that people like you are bringing into the consciousness of others the fact that well-being is as important in the workplace. And, you know, it's not an easy thing. Just as the human body is quite a complex organism, workplaces are also complex organisms. In fact, it reminds me of another book that I read a while back about the social organism. So online being an organism as well. You know, we have these different systems which do behave as organisms, and they have health issues. But each individual part of these organisms almost has a responsibility to be as healthy as you can be in that environment. And, you know, I guess like you were saying, you know, if you really can't improve the environment, then, you know, maybe think of how you might move out of it for everybody's sake, not just yours. But, you know, maybe a shift will help trigger something else that will bring about change. So I think it's fantastic what you're doing at Working Well.
Thank you.
Great name for great name for a business, I think. I think we do have to understand that we don't just leave everything at the door when we walk into our workplace. That everything that we are, all that we are, the name of your book, comes with us.
Yes.
And to recognize that, and to hopefully help other people recognize that too. Being authentic is really important. And I do see, or have seen over the years, how difficult it can be for people, including me, to be our authentic selves at work because of all the expectations and pressures that we perceive.
Yeah.
And those might just be our perceptions.
I think being ourselves is really important. I have a slight bugbear, I must admit, with the message of, you know, that just says be authentic at work. Because I think, hang on a minute, what do we mean by that? Do we mean I'm furious, I'm going to start ranting? I don't think so.
Good point. I mean, there are certain social...
norms, aren't there?
Norms, that's the one, yeah.
We have to try and bring more, we bring all of us anyway. Have to be able to show more of ourselves, but still appropriately.
Yes.
And still managed.
Yes.
And what is really helpful is also being aware of what we're not showing. So we know it's going on, even if we've made a choice. I'm going to keep shtum now, but I know I'm absolutely livid.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And it's so true. You can't just open your mouth and let rip and, you know, expect there to be no consequences, for instance, right? You may say, well, I'm just being authentic.
Yes. Mm.
However, you know, in the context that you were saying these things, it wasn't appropriate. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Gabriella, it's been an absolute joy speaking with you. Now, tell us again, if anybody wants to connect with you, presumably your book is everywhere. It's online. You can buy it online at the usual places.
Yes. Go into bookshops and you can find it in the usual.
In the usual, yeah. Exactly.
And it's in paperback, so.
Sorry?
It's in paperback.
It's in paperback, which is fantastic. But tell us where people can get in touch with you or find out more about your work. If they want to connect with you as well,
they can find me. Oh, now I'm struggling to remember the addresses of my websites. So I've got two websites. One is workingwell.cc.
Right.
And the other is Gabriella Brown, BRAUN.co.uk. And
fantastic.
The one, Gabriella Brown, is about the book and the writing, and workingwell.cc is about the company.
Absolutely brilliant. Well done for remembering those. I thought I was the worst one at doing that, but obviously no. No, seriously, it's great to hear what you're doing. I think what you're doing is fantastic, as I've said. And I've really enjoyed our conversation today. And it's been really full of useful ideas and information. But I think if we've just made the point well that well-being is an issue and as important in the workplace as anywhere else, then I think, you know, we've done our job here, because it's so ignored in many areas.
I totally, totally agree. And it's a bit of a starting place, really. If people are unwell, you're not going to achieve a lot in the workplace.
Absolutely.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
Yes, well-being isn't just about fending off infections and making sure we eat the right things for our bodies, and it isn't confined to our homes either. Just as UK Health Radio isn't confined to our website anymore, you can listen to our shows on all the main podcast platforms now. It can be as easy as just asking Siri or Alexa to play UK Health Radio if you have either of those in your home or in the office. If you appreciate our shows, or if they've helped you, please help us spread the word by liking and sharing them. You never know, it might be just what someone you know needs to hear. For even more health information, there's our sister publication, Health Triangle magazine. Now, that's a monthly magazine that's full of great features that complement our radio shows. And you can subscribe online at ukhealthradio.com. And of course, you can find me online at jjsalchemy.com. or on Facebook and Instagram as The Practical Alchemist. Let me know there if you have any queries, comments or suggestions. I'd love to hear from you. So that wraps it up for today. I hope you'll join me again soon here. But for now, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.